everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm Jace.
I'm Manny.
And this episode, we're going to be talking about DC Rebirth. Is it week 12? A few of the number ones, anyway, that are coming out this week. Yeah, pretty sure it's week 12. But first, Manny's going to fill us in on his Stockton Comic-Con experience. So take it away, Manny.
Well, it's obviously held in Stockton, California, and this is actually their fifth year. They've been consecutively growing from, I think, from their first year, which they started in a college campus, actually. Their fifth year, I don't have the numbers for this year yet, but I know last year they were over 14,000 guests for a Saturday and Sunday show. And every year it seems to get better. This year, some of the guests they do a really good job at mixing it all up, pop culture-wise, wrestling, comics, TV, et cetera. Whatever is popular at the moment, they do a good job at bringing a little bit of everything. For example, at this show, they had the classic team of NWO. So Kevin Nash was there, Scott Hall and X-Pac were some of the guests, as well as I don't have her name in front. Veronica Taylor, the voice of Ash Ketchum from Pokemon, which is very big at the moment. Also a special guest there. And then Michael Dorn from Star Trek was there. Also was a popular guest. And then as far as comic book artists and writers, not too many very big names, except for Liam Sharp was there as a guest. That's the current artist on Wonder Woman, the book that's the first week, titled The Lies. So he was there. I got a chance to talk to him for a little bit. He's really cool, really easy. I'm not sure what I expected from him, but he was a lot cooler than I thought he'd be. Let me just put it that way. You've had a chance to talk to him, right, Jace?
Yeah, we've had him on the show.
Okay.
I interviewed him at WonderCon, and then, you know, I talked to him at San Diego, and, you know, I got the cheetah, an original piece of art from him at San Diego, so that was cool. Yeah, he's a great guy.
Yeah, and then also Jay Lee was there, so the current colorist on Batgirl and Birds of Prey, and also the Archer and Armstrong, Alan Pasalacqua was there. I had a chance to talk with him for a little bit. And like anyone else joining Valiant these days, really, really cool guy, really easy. Talked with him for a little while. Just overall, really good show. Really diverse cosplay. I was expecting a ton of like Jokers and Harleys, but they actually all kinds of creativity going on. So it was really cool to see. The one thing I don't like about Stockton Con is the fact that it's in an arena, and there are some areas where it is just impossible to move. And we've had a couple of shows here where we kind of go through and some people just don't follow it, man. I just kind of, I almost feel like turning to them and be like, hey, you need to listen to this episode, because man, sometimes there's some areas where the smell got bad. But yeah, it gets way too packed in some areas. That's my only complaint, but a good show.
Now, So you say it's an arena, so it's just a big, like a basketball arena, like just a big floor space, and then seats going up.
Like that, they have all the retailers on the main floor, the artist all the way in the back, and then on the, I guess you can call it the concourse level, yeah, upstairs is where they have all the special guests, all the celebrities.
Okay.
So it's kind of, but you know, they do the best with the space they have.
So how come those areas that were crowded, like what was it that was there, like popular retailers there, or was it the celebrity guest area that was really crowded? Like what, why were those particular areas really
crowded? It's just that all the alleyways, it just seems like they don't ever give them enough room width wise. And it seems like a lot of the people that go also maybe don't have specific, a lot of people just kind of like standing and looking and, okay, not really. Some people like to stand in the middle of the aisle and talk and things of that nature. And the same thing upstairs where all the guests are. Well, obviously, you know, you want to catch a glimpse of the person in the back, even if you're not gonna, you know, take a picture with them or get an autograph. A lot of people just standing around, not really moving. This is sometimes the people ask for photos with cosplayers in the wrong spots, and it holds up an entire area. So yeah, it causes congestion everywhere.
Did you just go one day?
Look. Yeah, just on Saturday. Show doesn't necessarily need 2 days to go to. I mean, it was cool to go both days, but you can get it done by 2 or 3 o'clock. It's not a 2 day show, kind of like Long Beach would be.
Yeah. did you do any shopping? Did you look around? Were there any good deals?
They have a ton of pop figures, and I was actually looking for the Suicide Squad Joker pop, which is just ridiculously hard to find. And I found two of them, but they were $30, $40. One was $30 and the other one was $40. So I passed. Yeah, and then,
if that later, or if it'll come down,
I'm sure it will eventually, but I mean, just right now with the popularity of a Suicide Squad, I know it's really hard to find, and it's just my obsession to pick it up. Which, by the way, I did. I actually found one hidden at the mall the next day. Oh. So I got it for just regular price.
Oh, nice.
So that was good. But retailer did have good deals. I'm pretty sure he picked up a lot somewhere. Of discounted books, but he had hardcover and just they had volumes of said books. There was nothing necessarily that I was looking for. It was a lot of older Marvel books, mostly, and nothing too crazy. But I did find a couple of Rebirth variant covers that I hadn't had. You know that they had Jason Fabok's Harley Quinn there that he did an exclusive cover for. They had the color and the black and white. Was pretty cool.
I haven't even seen that one.
Yeah, he did one. They released it specifically at a show he went to somewhere on the East Coast, but they had a few here, so that was kind of cool.
Did you run into Brian, one of the show? You know, one of the guys that puts it on, Valiant guy.
But no, I didn't.
I'm sure he was probably busy running the show. I was just curious. Did you see?
No, I didn't.
Oh, go ahead.
No.
Did you see any of the rest of the people that we always see, like at shows?
Yeah, I ran into Dylan, guy who does friend of ours who does marketing for Top Cow. They because it's always Top Cow is always Dylan's always busy the show in California. So to him for a little while, bring me up to speed on an upcoming book that they have called, what is this new book called? Because he introduced me also to the artist on it, Chris Northrop. He's doing colors on it. What is that book called? I think it's called Oblivion. What is it called?
Don't know. I know don't they have a book called Romulus coming up?
Yes, I think so. It's not. That's not it. I'm pretty sure it's called. Come on. Damn it! See what it is.
Just look up the artist. You'll probably find it.
I know the colorist's name, but not. Let me look it up.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice to hear that the show is doing well. So obviously there's demand there. But it's kind of, sounds like they're having some growing pains for sure. Be interesting to see what they do.
It's a good show overall. I can't really, that's the, if I mean, if I'm gonna nitpick about something, it's just gonna be about the spacing of it. But I think depending on what the numbers are for this year, they may have to look for a bigger venue.
I wonder what's available there, you know what I mean? Like, they may not,
yeah.
I mean, it's Stockton, California, it's not like it's some big city. So you wonder if they are going to have to, you know, go somewhere else.
Yeah.
Or
so. They'll probably stay there, but maybe it's, hey, they get to the point where if it sells out, it sells out.
You just kind of wonder what's the next step for them, you know, to make it so that it's kind of like a Long Beach and they can attract, you know, some more names. Especially, you know, comic book wise.
Yeah, well, it looks like a lot of the names that they attract are local names.
Yeah.
So, you know, they have. I know Alan. He's out of Modesto right now, and Liam is out of Walnut Creek, I believe.
Yeah.
You know, local talent seems just to head out there. But I mean, they get the wrestlers. Even I mean, they're not doing much now, but they're. There's still long lines to see NWO.
That's crazy.
But you know, I'll tell you one thing. It does date me because I see them and I'm like, God damn, they're old. I just remember seeing them when I was younger and now it's just like, man, that's crazy. But I mean, when I was, they're wrestling when I was, what, 6 or 7? Probably maybe before I was born, so. Just how old they are. So, I think the book, if I'm not mistaken, is called Eclipse.
Yeah, that could be. That sounds right.
So, yeah, they're promoting that.
Yeah, I'm actually really looking forward to that book. So, well, sounds like a pretty good show. You have another one coming up this weekend?
Yeah, I do. Heroes and Villains in San Jose. Which is it's more of a meet and greet type show that they do, so you can meet people from Arrow if you want, or I know they're gonna have a lot of they're going to have a lot of people from a lot of different shows. So Arrow, Flash, Legends of Tomorrow, a couple of people from Walking Dead, Once Upon a Time. So, other than that, I haven't really seen a list of how, you know, any other people. I know they're going to have retailers there and whatnot. So, this is one of those larger corporate shows that they do and, you know, in big cities, yeah. kind of like Wizard World, I guess. So, this is my first of this type to go to. So it'll be interesting to see how this kind of differs from the shows I'm used to going to.
Yeah. I mean, I have to say that as a diehard comic fan, I'm not a fan of the Wizard World style of show. You know, we've talked about that at various times. You know, Phoenix Comic Con here kind of suffers from that. You know, what happens is at some point, when you start inviting so many celebrities, you have to guarantee, you know, the show's got to pay to put the celebrity up in a hotel as well as their travel and some other expenses. And then they have to, on top of that, guarantee that they're going to make a certain amount of money. And if they don't...
Oh, wow.
If they don't, then the show's got to make that up out of their own pocket, right? So, say for example, Phoenix Comic Con invites, I don't know, they had Ron Perlman here this last year. I think maybe it was the year before. But anyway, so, you know, you invite Ron Perlman and you guarantee that in his, you know, 3 days at the show or whatever, he's going to make, you know, $10,000 for his 3 days of work. That means he's going to sell enough photo ops and autographs to, you know, to make $10,000. And if he doesn't, you know, if the sales receipts aren't that much, then the show's got to make it up out of the pocket. So maybe somebody like Ron Perlman, you know, is popular enough that that's going to happen. Then you take somebody like Lee Majors, let's say, who I know for sure was there this last year. You know, obviously they might not guarantee him the same, you know, numbers, but they still have to, you know, they're still offering him a certain amount of money. And again, if he doesn't make that,
yeah,
the show's got to make that up out of their own pocket. And so then it becomes an issue of trying to get guests that you know people are going to want to see so that the show is not spending its own money because it's so expensive to put on. But on the flip side of that, what also happens is we're seeing the prices of admission, like the prices for a badge or a ticket or whatever you want to call it, the price to get in, you know, it's getting to be expensive compared to what it used to be. You know what I mean? Like, you used to go to, like, I remember when I was like in junior high going to a comic book, you know, quote unquote comic book show. Wouldn't really call it a convention, but a comic book show. And it was at Cedar Lanes in Fresno, you know? And it was just like in this little room there. And it didn't cost anything to get in, you know? And they maybe had like one artist there, you know, one person, one comic creator signing, and that was it, you know. And then it was a bunch of dealers with tables that were selling comics, you know. And then later, when like baseball card, the boom started taking off, then they used to have once a month at the mall. Fashion Fair used to have a show, and then same thing, Manchester Center, another mall in Fresno, used to have a show, and then the Ramada Inn started holding it. And then it moved over to the University Piccadilly Inn show like once a month. And yeah, I mean, you'd be lucky if there was a comic creator there, you know? And so it's grown from that to what we have now. But again, it's having that balance, you know, a lot of the shows are in it to make money. Some of them are nonprofit, but most of them are in it to make money. So, you know, they got to sell tickets. In order to sell tickets, they got to have attractions, you know, quote unquote, you know, they got to have people that draw fans in.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is it's getting to be, you know, they're getting, and the other thing is there's so many conventions now. So they're competing for this limited amount of talent. So they're having to offer you were talking about Top Cow a minute ago, a perfect example. Matt Hawkins has told us specifically, like, they don't go to a show unless the show gives them their space for free, you know, like there's no reason to go to a show that's not willing to, you know, let the publisher in for free, because the publisher's a draw for fans. And there's so many shows now, like if show A is not going to, you know, give you the perks, then there's show B, C, and D lining up to steal you away, you know, because there's multiple shows every weekend now. So it's I don't know, I think it's starting to get to the point where we're going to start seeing some shows fold. We haven't seen it too much yet, but I think those days are coming, you know, because it just, it can't, the market can't support. I mean, people only have a certain amount of money to spend, you know what I mean?
Yeah, especially like this show, for example, like Heroes and Villains, if you want to go just Saturday, it's going to cost you $45 to get in.
Yeah, that's...
As far as... that does not get you any autographs or anything. You still have to pay for whatever else you want. And if it's an autograph, it's one price. If you want a photo, it's another. And if you want both, it's a combination of both. So just to take a photo with somebody you're a fan of, you're gonna spend a little bit of money. And I'm not sure how much money people have these days to do that.
Yeah, I agree. I agree 100%.
So that's kind of what I'm curious to see, is to see just fans in general, how their interaction there, how many people maybe I notice going from one line to another, maybe myself picking one or maybe two and getting a photo or something, but this is more of an observation mission than anything else.
Yeah, I wonder. You said that at the stocking show, everybody was on a different level. Like the celebrities were on the second level, and there's people, you know, people had lines, obviously, like the wrestlers and such. Was there security there? Like, because you know, like at WonderCon, at Phoenix Comic Con, when the celebrities are there at the booths, and if people walk by and try to take pictures with their cell phones, you know, that haven't paid, the security is like, no, you can't take any pictures, can't take any pictures. Was it like that at Stockton?
Just for the NWO, yes. They had all the celebrities had handlers. But as far as the NWO themselves, they actually did have, they had an area, and there was a lot more staff there than any else you can do. And but with them, it was if you weren't in line, you were, it wasn't too far away, but not too close.
Yeah. All right. I was just curious. So let me play a sound effect for you here. You know what that is?
Oh.
All right. I'll play you another sound effect.
No! This is the chopper!
Oh, man. It's Predator.
Predator. I went and saw Predator tonight, man. You know, that movie's almost 30 years old. I never got to go see it on the
big screen. That movie's still amazing.
Yeah, I was 13 when it came out, but I don't know, for whatever reason, I didn't go and see it on the big screen. I didn't see many movies that summer. I think I was busy being in junior high, football and such. So that was my first time ever seeing it on the big screen. It was a lot of fun, dude. I mean, I've seen that movie probably 100 times. You know, I owned it on VHS growing up. I've watched it so many times, but it was cool to see it up on the big screen. You know, a lot of people were in there, and people would start laughing before the those iconic lines would even happen. You know, everybody was everybody was ready for it. So the get to the chopper line got some applause. So that was pretty cool. It was a lot of fun. go and see it on the big.
Hey,
it was crowded too.
Yeah, well, I mean, I would expect a classic movie like Predator was great. Because after that, Predator 2, I thought it took a huge step down with Danny Glover. I don't know why. I did not like Danny Glover, and I had issues thinking that he could actually go toe to toe with the Predator.
Yeah, I kind of can see that too. But it's funny though.
Yeah,
the original
was it like a showing, a special showing, or what?
Yeah, here in Phoenix on Tuesday nights, there's one of the groups of the Harkins Theaters. I don't know if they have them in California, but anyway, there's like three.
No.
There's three different Harkins Theaters. I mean, there's a lot of Harkins Theaters in the Phoenix area, but just a specific three. They're kind of spread out in different parts of Phoenix and the surrounding suburbs. But three of them to show on Tuesday nights, like throwback movies. Like 3 weeks ago was Titanic. Last week was Friday, the movie Friday. This week was Predator. Next week is like My Fair Lady. The following week is Dirty Harry. I know the week of Thanksgiving, they're showing Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. The Tuesday after Christmas, they're showing Die Hard, you know, the classic Christmas movie. I did see Die Hard in the theater. I remember going to see that. It was so good. So yeah, I went with a couple of friends from work. We're just like, man, chance to see Predator on the big screen. It was really cool. So, and it was, yeah, it was, there were a lot of people there. It wasn't sold out, but like all the middle, you know, seats, it was assigned seating, you know, the nicer theaters that have like the leather recliners or whatever. Which I really prefer, because then you don't have to worry about getting there super early to get a good seat. You know, like you buy your ticket ahead of time.
Oh, nice.
And you have assigned seating, and you know, you don't have to worry. I mean, there's no previews or anything. It was only $5. So it was a good deal. It was a lot of fun. So.
Cool.
May or may not go see Dirty Harry. I don't know. My schedule at work is changing. I'm not going to have Tuesdays off anymore. I'll have my one day off a week will be Wednesday now. So, which happens to be New Comic Book Day, and that is purposeful, people. It's purposeful. So we'll see.
Please do note, this is no ordinary comic book. It is in permanent condition. If you spill soda on it, it drops fly off harmlessly onto lesser comics.
Oh.
Yes, you are quite correct to gasp.
All right, so we have three number ones coming out this week. DC Rebirth Week 12. Two of them are the actual number ones of the ongoing series. That would be Hellblazer and Deathstroke. And then we have a Blue Beetle Rebirth one-shot that will be followed by Blue Beetle 1. So, you have a preference of which one you want to talk about first?
No, it doesn't matter.
All right, we'll go with Blue Beetle then. So, it's written by... Well, actually, I should say the story or the plot is Keith Giffen and Scott Collins, with Keith Giffen handling the scripting, Scott Collins handling the art, and Romulo Fajardo Jr. on colors. He's also the colorist who colors Nicola Scott, when she's doing the Wonder Woman Year One story. So I imagine Scott Collins is working digitally here. Usually that's the case when you see someone just listed as artist. There's no, you know, it's not pencils and then inks or whatever. So I found this issue to be okay. It was interesting in that it didn't really give a lot of history about the Blue Beetle character. You know, Blue Beetle was actually a Charlton character, and then DC bought all the Charlton characters at some point and brought them in to the DCU. I think they might have been on Earth C, I want to say, when they still had the multiverse. And then, of course, after Crisis on Infinite Earths, when there was only one Earth, some of them were brought in. And the original Blue Beetle was Dan Garrett. After Crisis on Infinite Earths, it was Ted Kord, and he didn't actually have the scarab that Dan Garrett had that gave him these mystical powers. And Ted Kord was just kind of like a poor man's version of Batman, I guess you'd say. You know, he had his own company, Kord Industries, and you know, he was a pretty good athlete, and he had a lot of gadgets and such, and he was pretty popular. He had his own series. I think it ran for 25 issues. And then he was a member of the Justice League. in the Wahaha days, as it's called, the Keith Giffen, J.M. DeMatteis, Kevin Maguire League, specifically teamed up as the comedy relief with Booster Gold. And he was a pretty beloved character. He actually was killed in the Infinite Crisis storyline that went down, and a lot of people didn't like that. Later, he was another third Blue Beetle, Jaime Reyes, who's a teenager. And supposedly the background there is that this scarab, which was of alien origin, kind of bonds to him, and he becomes a Blue Beetle, not out of choice, but just like because this alien technology has bonded with him. So we don't get very much. I mean, you can kind of glean a little information here or there from the story, but nothing's really explained. The story has Ted Kord. It has Jaime Reyes. Apparently, it's the scarab that's attached to Jaime Reyes. He's gone to Ted Kord for help. It inspires Kord to create gadgets. He's going to be a Blue Beetle. So it's kind of like there's two Blue Beetles, but really only Jaime Reyes has the powers. And then Dr. Fate shows up. Apparently, he's going to be a supporting character in the book and tells Ted Kord that he doesn't know what he's messing with. It turns out that there's some evil ancient sorcerers that bonded the scarab to Jaime Reyes, maybe, and fooled him into thinking it's alien technology when really it's not. And all Jaime Reyes really wants to do is get the thing. I mean, it's attached to him. He can't take it off. And it's interfering with his life. You know, he just wants to go to high school and be a regular kid. And that's not necessarily going to happen. So, not the best Rebirth issue I've read. I find the characters to be interesting. I find that Keith Giffen's dialogue, especially when writing the teenagers, felt very authentic, which kind of surprised me. I mean, Keith Giffen has been around for a long time, and he's a legend in comics. But he did a great job of kind of getting the tone of the teenagers, the banter back and forth. Did a great job with that. I also enjoyed Rack and Ruin, the villains, so to speak, of the piece. They were a lot of fun. As far as the art goes, it's Scott Collins' art. His style is not my favorite. I feel like I enjoy his art better when he draws people out of their costumes rather than in. You know, I prefer his scenes where people are just talking back and forth rather than the action scenes, which is kind of backwards, you know? You know, I prefer, you know, him drawing people just having conversations and having smaller panels rather than big giant splash pages. So I guess that says something about his storytelling style. I think his storytelling is probably the strongest aspect of his art, and maybe the action scenes. I just don't care for the style, the way he lays out the pages, I suppose. Overall, it's a good book. Definitely was interesting enough that I'll be picking up issue one. I have every issue of the first Ted Kord series. Like I mentioned, all 25 issues. I thought that was a really fun back in the day. So I'm curious to see where it goes. I mean, for me, Ted Kord is my Blue Beetle. I never really got on board with Jaime Reyes. When the new 52 launched, I did pick up the Blue Beetle series for the first three or four issues, and I just dropped it. It just didn't hold my interest. But I enjoy, as I said, the dialogue between Jaime and his friends, his teenage friends. So hopefully the supporting cast this time around will be a little stronger, because I remember not caring much for the Jaime supporting cast in his solo book. So it was a solid, if not spectacular, story. So I guess we'll see where it goes from here. What were your thoughts?
I did a little bit more history to it. I went into this book really, really wanting it to be amazing. And it fell a little bit short of that. Not that I didn't enjoy it. I was expecting a little bit more from it. A little bit more on maybe how their relationship came to be. Or, you know, a scene of the scarab attaching himself to Jaime. And So that sort of rebirth title, because this just goes right into mid fight. That's where we start. For me, Jaime Reyes, he's my Blue Beetle. If it wasn't actually for like Young Justice, I don't think I'd have too much interest in the character itself. That's where I was really introduced to him. More than anywhere else, that version of him. So, seeing him here, that kind of has me hooked. I liked it. I love Dr. Fate, so that was cool to see him there. That little twist at the end of it being more magic, not alien, kind of threw me off a bit. I'm not sure where they're going with it, but you know, I'll give it a shot. For now, I'm in with Blue Beetle, which sucks because I don't need another book in my life. I keep forgetting that number ones are still going to keep coming out through September. So, holy cow! Not the greatest, not the worst. The artwork was pretty good. I see what you mean about. I actually find that sometimes the Doctor look better than Blue Beetle himself in some panels. I can see what you mean, you know, characters out of outfits. Overall it was still good. Nothing wrong. Maybe it's because my expectations were a little bit too high for it. Like I said, this I think that more obscure characters sometimes time for them a little bit more. So, that's about it. Then again, he's also Hispanic, so I always root for the Hispanic.
Yeah, I would say that as far as like more background, a little more exposition, a little more, history of the character. I mean, this almost felt like it was the number one issue rather than the rebirth one shot.
Yeah, you know
what I mean,
like, definitely.
I mean, I go back to like Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps as, you know, a really good job. Robert Mundy did a really good job of kind of recapping where Hal is at, where the Corps is at, and the situation going forward, but still putting some new stuff in there. And then the first issue was like action packed, kind of like this Blue Beetle issue was. So this felt like, more like a number one rather than the rebirth one shot. So
I agree with you.
Yeah. And the other two actually are legitimate number ones, not just the rebirth one shots. We'll talk about Hellblazer next, written by Simon Oliver. Again, artist, Morgan Cat, is listed as the artist. So pencils and inks, again, it's probably done digitally. And then the colors are by Andre Szymanowicz, and Moritat himself does some colors. So, Poison Truth Part 1, we did see a little tease in the Hellblazer Rebirth one-shot, or either that or I read somewhere that the first arc was going to be a Swamp Thing asking for Constantine's help to rescue Abigail, and that's exactly what we have here. Not a whole heck of a lot happens in the story. Chas, John's sidekick / driver, played by what the heck's his name in the movies, played by LaBeouf, right? Is that his name? Shia LaBeouf?
Oh, Shia LaBeouf?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In the Keanu Reeves movies. Anyway, so he shows up, drags John out of bed. Takes him to a greenhouse where Swamp Thing is regrowing himself. And then Swamp Thing basically recruits John to help him rescue Abigail. They go and meet a friend of John's. And that's basically it. That's all that happens in the first episode. Except we meet a couple of brothers at the end. And they are up to no good, but we don't really know who or what they are other than they're extremely long-lived, and it's to be continued. So I will say that I enjoyed this issue a lot more than I did the Rebirth one-shot. I didn't care for the Rebirth one-shot very much. I wasn't necessarily even planning on reading Hellblazer at all. But, you know, I did get the advance copy, so I went ahead and read it. If I get an advance copy of issue 2, I will read that as well. Will I go out and buy issue 2? Probably not. There's just not enough there. It's just not my particular cup of tea. I am a little curious to know where exactly Abigail Arcane has disappeared to. I'm also a little curious about the brothers. But I find that I just don't care much for Constantine as a character. Like, I get the whole he's British, he smokes, he's a jerk thing, but I don't know, it just doesn't work for me. I'm just not feeling it. As far as the art goes, this art by Moritat looks much more like his work in All-Star Squadron. Much more stylized, much less kind of... The rendering is much less realistic, I guess you'd say. The All-Star Squadron, his art, his rendering had much more of an animation style, I guess you'd say. It's much more stylized. And then in the Rebirth issue, it looked much, you know, it tended more toward photorealistic. It certainly wasn't photorealistic, but it tended to look more, you know, true to life. And it seems like he's gone back here. So the pendulum's kind of swung back the other way, and it looks a little more of that animation style. So can't fault his storytelling, though. But I do find that his facial expressions aren't that great. It's not a strength of his art. So the colors are done well, though. Definitely sets a somber mood. Now, I know you and Jaden were both fans of the Rebirth issue. You both liked it. I did not. So what do you think about this issue?
No, I liked it a lot less. I found that Jordan for Swamp Thing, who I am slowly becoming a fan of, I wouldn't have enjoyed it as much. I mean, it's really just by the end of it, all you really get out of it is that lonely and sad because of it, and he's pushed a lot of people away, and that's why he's drinking. You know, I think it says something like, you know, everybody needs people, or something like that, to that effect. But other than that, besides his interactions with Swamp Thing and trying to help him out, nothing much happened. So I'm not really sure what to make of it. We're going to continue to have Swamp Thing. You know, maybe I'll continue to read it a little bit more. I thought that was cool how he appeared out of fruit. That was great. But it was a kind of whatever. Probably one of my least favorite books overall that have been out in the Rebirth line. Like I said, if it wasn't for Swamp Thing, it may be the worst one, or close to it. Right. I'm not even too much of a fan of the artwork in it. I'm not the biggest fan of the artist in general. So, it's this one, really disappointing, because I thought Constantine was a pretty cool character in the first in the Rebirth book, and this one, you know, I have a hard time even trying to figure out what's going on at the end. You know, who are these two brothers, and you know, what's really going on.
All right, what did you think of our? Well, first, let me say our final book is Deathstroke number one, written by Christopher Priest. The art is by Carlos Pagulian. I should say the pencils are by Carlos or Carlo, sorry, Carlo Pagulian. Inks by Jason Paz. Colors by Jeremy Cox. What do you think of this book?
It was kind of, it was another one of those whatever books. You know, from the very beginning when we went through the list of books, I think Deathstroke was one of my least books I was looking forward to, just because I'm not the biggest fan of the character, and I don't really care for him regardless. So the fact that he was going to have a bi-monthly book kind of surprised me. And so when I read this, I wasn't really too interested into it, to be honest with you. I half forced myself to read it, just to see what it's about. Hopefully, maybe it surprised me, kind of like Action Comics did, or even Superman, because I didn't read a lot of Superman beforehand.
Right.
To be fantastic books, and now I'm hooked on those. But yeah, nothing much here. It was Clock King and Deathstroke, and I guess one of his buddies. The artwork is great. I will say that it was great to look at. Overall, the story, it really did not catch my attention at all. It's just, I'm just not a fan of the character. That's all.
All right, fair enough. I am a fan of the character. That being said, I'm very confused. I felt like I was a little confused after the Rebirth one-shot, and I feel like I thought maybe things would become more clear after this, and some questions were answered, but I don't know. It's such a departure from where Deathstroke has been for the entire New 52 and even from before that. And I do kind of understand. I know Christopher Priest has gone on record as saying he wanted to return the character to his villainous roots. And so I can understand, but it's just such an abrupt change that it's kind of hard to follow. And so I think this might be the case where this is going to be a story that reads better in collected editions than reading it issue to issue.
Just
because you can get more out of it, and it'll make more sense down the road. I'm still in on Deathstroke. Christopher Priest is an immensely talented comic creator. He's a legend in the industry. And so hopefully the sales will dictate him staying on the book long enough to have a good long run. And we'll look back on this the way that people look back on his Black Panther series. So I'm definitely in. Like you said, the art, Carlo Pagulian, man, the art is gorgeous. This book is beautiful to look at. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention the colors by Jeremy Cox. Colors in this book are amazing. Especially in that it jumps around, the narrative jumps around a little bit, and he does a great job of changing the colors around to kind of fit the mood and the setting. Sometimes it's, much more dark and grayish. Other times the colors are very bright. And there's a few subplots going on that are interesting as well, that I hope we learn more about. But yeah, overall, I'm just a little disappointed. This was one of the books I was most excited about. I heard Christopher Priest, Deathstroke. I was like, yes. So I'm ready to kind of get into the meat of the story, but I have a feeling it's gonna take a while, because he is using kind of a non-linear style of storytelling, because he's flashing back. He wants to tell both, the story or the missions that Deathstroke is currently on, at the same time flashing back so that the readers get an understanding of why he is the way he is, and that, yes, he is a bad person. He is a bad guy. He is a villain. So, it's a lot to do. It's a lot to undertake to kind of reestablish and kind of inform new readers of who exactly Deathstroke is and make a new baseline for the character. So I understand the challenge of that. And I'm willing to be patient, especially if Carlo Pagulian keeps turning in art like this. Really, really amazing. If you're not a huge Deathstroke fan, maybe I would suggest waiting for the trade. Because I have a feeling after the first six issues or five issues, it would be much easier to jump on and kind of understand what's going on. But, man, the art is great. I love where the series is going. I'm ready for, a big chunk of the story to be out there so we can kind of understand exactly who this character is and what exactly his world is and his current situation and how all the players and supporting cast fit in. So, I enjoyed it. Looking forward to more. All right, I guess that's going to wrap it up. Anything to add, Manny?
No, that's about it. I know that next week we get a really cool crossover from Image and Top Cow. The Eden's Fall starts next week. I'm really looking forward to that. And then other than that, I think we talked about I'll be at Heroes and Villains this weekend. And then after that, I think both of our next shows is going to be Long Beach, correct?
Yeah, there's actually a Palm Beach Comic Con this weekend that had, like, Stan Lee's going to be there. They had some big names. And I remember hearing about it, and then it kind of, like, fell off my radar, and then I didn't see anything about it until this week, and much too late to apply for a press pass. It's not that far from where I am, but, you know, it's their first show, and, no press pass, and I'm working so much right now, I don't know that I'm willing to give up my one day off to drive, 8 hours in the car round trip to spend a few hours at a show that I don't have any idea how good it's going to be. So, yeah, Long Beach for sure. And, we got some other stuff coming up. Yeah, some interviews and such. So make sure you're following along with the Comic Source. You can do that by visiting our website at thecomicsourceblog.com for all past episodes of the podcast. You can also watch episodes of our YouTube channel there, as well as finding a link to Manny's written blog and my written blog, and of course our sketch gallery. You can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. You can also do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to keep up to date on new episodes and convention coverage. And also, Manny's continuing his sideline work for LRM Media. So make sure you're following him on Twitter. What's the Twitter handle for that, Manny?
Mine is going to be... Oh, my God. I don't even remember it. It's off the... It is... it's kind of brand... They reassigned us all, so it's a little... It's at @LRM_Emmanuel.
There you go. And you want to know what he's up to at Heroes and Villains this weekend, make sure you're following along there. Once again, thanks for joining us, everybody. We'll talk to you next time.